Hi, everyone.
Hey, Natasha.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Welcome to Radical Nourishment. I'm Natasha Monnatau, an artist and narrative strategist with the Food Culture Collective. And today I'm joined by a crew of emerging audio artists.
I'm Shefali Patel.
I'm Alejandra Salazar.
I'm Nino McQuown.
It's Danelle Wedderburn.
The voices you're hearing are members of our inaugural cohort for Ears in the Field, a fellowship that we convened to uplift stories of sovereignty and self-determination found in moments big and small. Join us all season long on Radical Nourishment to be immersed in stories that witness food as teacher and its power to shape narratives that nourish us. Today we've got a story about the plant indigo from you, Danelle.
Yes. So ever since I was a kid, I was obsessed with textiles. I remember seeing small squares of blue vinyl next to the camphor and bottles of Kananga and Florida water. If you rubbed it between your fingers, it would disappear slowly. Each turn in your hand leaves a blue pigmented impression on your skin. I was young then, but I understood those squares of blue were a form of protection and healing. My mother told me so, and I knew even then that I could trust her word. I later learned that blue vinyl is made with indigo, but for most of my life, I knew it by another name. We called it blue in our house, and we came to know one another through faith and spirituality.
Beautiful.
Indigofera is the genus or the root of a family tree that consists of hundreds of different species of indigo. The richness in the pigment is reflected in the history of the plant. It's cultivated around the world, in Africa, the Caribbean, Asia, Europe, even North and South America. It has spiritual, medicinal, and craft uses that are unique to the indigenous people who cultivate the plant and create natural dyes. These practices existed before colonization and enslavement. And I wonder how to hold this wisdom alongside the dark history this pigment carries. Indigo was a cash crop cultivated by enslaved African and indigenous people globally. This plant was colonized alongside the people that cared for the land. Those squares of blue vinyl keep us connected to our ancestors and help us remember all they have to teach us. I think about indigo as one of those ancestors, and one of those teachers, too. I wanted to know how other families, both blood and chosen, came to understand and care for this plant. So I traveled to Prospect, Virginia, and Baltimore, Maryland, to connect with three land stewards and natural dyers who were caring for indigo in a multitude of ways. The first person I met was Son Inglis Jr., and I quickly understood that I was dealing in the realm of gold. Not the precious stone, but a precious person.
I am a Black and Akahanok queer and trans person creating sanctuary on Okanichi and Monacan land in Prospect, Virginia. We are growing vegetables, herbs, mushrooms, and many, many, many other things because I am an experimental human being who's also an artist, a builder of many things, a nerd, just a all-in-all curious person.
I said the word yellow, and they replied with goldenrod, yarrow, and dyer's chamomile. I said the word red, and they pointed me towards madder and amaranth. Then I said blue, and I learned about their comrades, Kenya Miles.
I'm the founder of Blue Light Junction. I'm an artist and a natural dyer.
And Rosa Chang.
I'm an artist and a storyteller based in Baltimore, Maryland.
I imagine Sun, Rosa, and Kenya as different phases in the indigo growing season. Sun embodies fall, when the indigo leaves have been harvested and the flowers begin to bloom and bear seeds that will be kept for another season. Their name is associated with the sky, but really, they're of the earth.
What I fell in love with was definitely the indigo. which I did not expect to fall in love with, honestly, because at first, I think the first day with it, I was just kind of like, oh, it's this like green plant, cute, you know, it's cute. But then as I went through the season with it and I saw like the insect relationships, also the little pink and white flowers that come on them, how bushy they get, how hardy it is too. I think through experiencing growing it and seeing it go through its own challenges, it makes it like this actually like motivating plant for me to grow. It's like when I look at it, I actually get that kind of energy from it.
It's like a mirror. The care that you pour into the plant and all the seen and unseen things that the plant pours into you as it grows. This symbiotic relationship is at the root of the story. The vibrant colors that emerge from the indigo plant begin here, in the soil. I was drawn to Liberation Seed Farm to meet Sun and learn more about this connection. I felt this immediate sense of familiarity when I spoke with Sun over the phone. There was this warmth that carried our conversation that I knew would be even more fruitful in person. I pulled into their driveway. They had like 6 dogs and 3 cats, and I heard all of them at once. And it was like a symphony of animals and like insects. And I immediately felt at home there. I felt that same warmth and that same smile reflected on their parents' faces, who live and work with Sun to steward their family-run farm in Prospect, Virginia.
But introduce you to the more mature collards. introduce you to the more mature kale. All these white flowers are valerian. So see how we interplant the herbs, you know, we let them grow with the veggies.
There was this buzz on the land. It was equal parts insect, animal, human, and spirit.
Remembering. I'm always asking myself, like, what is the history of this land? What is, you know, what's the memory of this land? And how do my actions today affect, you know, what has been and what is to come? I've seen evidence on this land, or I've felt moments on this land where I haven't been at peace. So this farming process is all a process of kind of healing those wounds and remembering that those wounds actually exist here, too.
Land stewardship can be a call to action to address past harms and educate students of all ages. Thinking about the collective desires of our ancestors also means acknowledging the harm that enslaved African and Indigenous people survived while caring for the land and cultivating indigo.
Land stewardship has been a path towards freedom for me. And I definitely feel that it is a path towards freedom for other people as well. And yeah, that's where that word liberation came from, was just this process of discovery of what land stewardship even meant for me here in Prospect, Virginia. Thinking about the wants of my ancestors for me and my peers and my people. Or just oppressed people in general in the world, thinking of like all of our collective ancestors and what they might want from us. And whenever I think of that question, it always kind of lands towards like, one, taking care of others, but also it goes back to that land stewardship all the time. It always goes back to taking care of the earth, taking care of the land, growing food on the land, growing nutritional herbs on the land. And then further from that, somehow taking what's grown and giving it to the people around us too. So liberation from past traumas, liberation from, shoot, even the current traumas, starvation, the systems of oppression, just like liberating myself and liberating ourselves from all the many oppressive factors that there are in our lives.
If we think of this plant as an ancestor, then we must begin with the stories that exist in the soil. Land stewardship has been a useful tool in the journey toward self-sovereignty for generations of Black and Indigenous communities in the United States. This autonomy of self, of family, of community exists in the soil, too. If we sat still with one another, what would emerge?
It actually feels really nice to sit at this level with the farm. So I don't think I've actually ever just sat in the middle of the farm. Outside of like just being out of doing work, you know. So it's nice to just be sitting still. Back to remembering, you know, indigo dyeing is like a deeply ancestral process. Having blue hands is a deeply ancestral thing to have physically, you know, to have blue hands, to experience what it looks like to have your brown skin covered in blue pigment is like a moment. I mean, pretty much everyone I've seen who's black experienced their hands being blue. They look at it for a second, and there's, speaking of remembering, I'm sure there's a moment where they're like, oh, wow. Even like my dad was saying earlier, like, you know, I knew that those ancestors would come and have my back during this time as I'm doing this work. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. The other day, actually, I swear, when I was coming out of the house, I was turning a corner from the house, and I swear I saw my grandmother standing there. It was weird.
It's possible that she was there.
Yeah.
It's in those little flashes in your eye.
It's like a flash of lightning, reminding you that what was is here with you again, at least for a moment.
Exactly. Trying to remember who the ancestors are, who my ancestors are, what they went through, and trying not to go through a tongue swab or a stick in my arm or something, you know, a blood sample or something. It just feels really potent for me to make those discoveries through my experience in nature.
I left Sun's farm feeling so warm. A few days later, the season was changing. I was excited to meet the next stop at the Indigo intersection, Kenya Miles.
The dye plants that I feel a great connection to, for me, indigo was the beginning of that. And a lot of that was in a personal practice. And it was my entry point into natural dyeing. So I feel really inspired and also named my son Indigo for those reasons. Like, it was the first plant that I loved, you know.
If Sun is indigo in the fall, then Kenya represents the summer season when the green leaves are pulled from the earth and the deep blue indigo pigment begins to take shape in the fermentation vat. When our hands take on that blue hue as we experiment with natural dyes, textiles, and craft.
My work is centered around collective creation and looking at our historical past, traditions, and practices through plants, through craft, tradition, and techniques, and reconnecting myself and educating others around those practices, honoring cultures that are unseen sometimes, or things that have been lost in our connection.
As I sat with Kenya, Sun's words about honoring our ancestors through land sovereignty and stewardship were still buzzing in my ears. It was a change of place and pace, moving from a farm in rural Virginia to an urban garden and dye studio in the heart of Baltimore. I hear echoes of Sun's vision in Kenya's work to preserve and pass down natural dye and craft traditions too. Blue Light Junction is a place where our green indigo plant transforms into blue.
The garden that we started is adjacent to the studio space, and so I was kind of walking around it one day and realized that the alleys like intersect at three different points and that it was a junction. And so I was like, oh, cool. And I was reading the first chapter of Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Water Dancer, and the protagonist is dying and he speaks of the blue light that essentially is a portal to the ancestors and how the blue light was home, you know, and it felt welcoming and that he had never known anything so sure and comforting. And I think that that's what I wanted the studio to feel like, but also just that connection back to our ancestors and the things that they've given us. And so Blue Light Junction came from that.
There were thousands of dried indigo leaves and marigolds hanging from the ceiling. I shook them gently, finding pleasure in the sound they made when they brushed together. I saw my first indigo vat and took a peek inside.
So we have a number of dry plants. Most of them are indigo that we intend to use for our sukumo practice, just to see what composting the indigo looks like. We also have marigolds and amaranth.
It was cool to the touch, much different than I imagined. I rubbed my fingers across animal skulls and natural fibers that were transformed by this deep blue pigment. These were sacred altar-supporting objects, no different than the square of blue anil from my childhood.
I also really want to capture stories and traditions. That's always been a big thing for me, not being able to ask my grandparents or my great-grandparents things. Like, I want to be able to do that for this work and this craft and this, like, tradition, these traditions. And so how do I do that? How do we do that? And I'm like, we do it together, you know?
When you walk through the doors of Blue Light Junction, it's almost like you're in a crafty children's library. A few kids were playing with a life-size version of Connect Four. My nephew would feel right at home here. He would love playing in here with these kids. And there was quite the assortment of fiber and natural dye books. But there was one in particular that caught my eye as I was getting ready to head home. I thought the characters looked a lot like Kenya and Sun. So I began to thumb through the pages of a children's book called My Indigo World, a true story of the color blue. It turns out they were Kenya and Sun, and it was written by their comrade, Rosa Chang.
Can I show you one more? Oh, this is the sun. I'm harvesting indigo flower. Yeah, this page represents the fall season. That's the time we get really beautiful pink flower from the indigo garden and started harvesting the flower to collect seed.
Fall is the last alley in our three-point junction, in our final season, spring. When the indigo seed has broken through the soil and is ready to be sown into the earth once again. Rosa is like an indigo pollinator. She's an interdisciplinary artist from South Korea that focuses on natural dyes, specifically indigo. Her work is grounded in drawing historical connections between the plant and the cultures and communities who care for them.
Indigo is like motif and tool to connect people and community. So I'm more like interested in building a community, but indigo, the reason I chose indigo is because indigo is one of the ancient dye practice, and not only from like Asia, but like even like West Africa and Europe and almost all different part of the country and culture, they carry their own indigo traditions. So that's more like what I really intrigued by, seeing that how people in the world really, really appreciate that blue shade, right?
Thinking about indigo as a tool to connect communities was a thread that felt familiar to me. I was curious about how families, both blood and chosen, use this plant in their everyday lives.
Indigo used to be medicinal plants too. Like, as an example, like, you know that leaves has an antiseptic component, that the indigo dye, the fabric itself is medicinal. Like, as an example, Japanese samurais wear like very black, like dark indigo garment, is because that indigo dye, the fabric, is good for healing the wound. There's a historical article that in Korea, when there's a very epidemics happen, people boil indigo dye the fabric and then drink the water as a medicine. People really use it for life.
I remember drinking dried indigo mixed with water as a child. It was meant to expel any sickness or ailment living inside the body. It was comforting to learn that this West Indian practice existed on the other side of the world many lifetimes before my own. Rosa's work as an indigo pollinator and historian creates countless interactions like this.
Sometimes the indigo is very big part of difficult conversation, like historical parts, but also a lot of joy in general.
When I close my eyes and visualize those three intersecting points, Rosa, Kenya, and Sun, I see how their friendship began to take shape around indigo. I understand how they infuse their backgrounds in land stewardship, natural dyeing, history, and craft with this precious plant. There's a simple indigo map and dye recipe in My Indigo World, so students of all ages can find their points of origin and trace their ancestral connection to the plant. The desire to educate and to pass down all that they learned to the next generation was a recurring theme in Kenya and Sun's work too.
We just wanted to open up people's minds of like what's possible with like the natural world and plants, and that's what I want to do with people here is like, you know, show them you can do herbs, you can make botanicals, you can feed people, you can dye your clothes, you can just educate the masses.
Sun imagined Liberation Seed as a respite where both blood and chosen family gather and create together in harmony with their land in Prospect, Virginia. Our visions of a safe haven are shaped by the landscapes and the people that exist within them. How would this respite feel in the city of Baltimore?
I think the challenge for me is just figuring out how to offer something that asks more of the educational system. Yeah, I want to be able to invest in students knowing much more about themselves through earth practice and through plant kinship and honoring like the expressions that they have of themselves through our natural materials. So I think that those are some of the dreams, and in small ways they're ever present, you know, and drawing themselves closer to the surface, because we're planting the seeds all the time, you know.
Sun, Kenya, and Rosa are planting these seeds of wisdom into the next generation of land stewards, natural dyers, and crafters. I feel compelled to do the same.
Radical Nourishment is a project from Food Culture Collective and Heal Food Alliance. At Food Culture Collective, we're transforming the story of food to help us collectively reorient to food as life source, compost legacies of harm, and grow a culture of care. Heal Food Alliance is a national multi-sector, multiracial coalition building collective power to transform our food and farm systems. Radical Nourishment is produced by our Ears in the Field fellows, as well as Zach Rosen and me, Natasha Monnadau. It's edited by Zach Rosen. To learn more about today's story, visit the links in our show notes.